options activity has altered the investment landscape. Get an edge on this massive flow of funds with Tier 1 Alpha's Market Situation Report, brought to you by HedgEye, a daily newsletter of the latest moves in the options market and a weekly webcast featuring myself, Mike Green of Simplify Asset Management, and Tier 1 Alpha's Craig Peterson and David Pegler. Go to HedgEye.com/research for more information.
Welcome to the Weekly Notebook Review. I am Robert McGrory. This podcast takes on a bit of a different format, where we are live each week on Twitter Spaces. I crack open my notebook and review HedgEye research with anyone who wants to learn a better way to invest. We feature both HedgEye power users as well as some special guests that might pop in. If you want to learn more about our research, visit HedgEye.com. If you'd like to participate in the live stream, follow me on Twitter at HedgEyeRJM. Now, let's review the data.
Good morning. Good morning to all. Hope everyone's having a great Wednesday. We'll get things started here momentarily. Hope everyone's enjoying their January 24th. It's hard to believe that the January is going to come to a close here in a week, capped off by the FOMC. What a beautiful world we live in. All right. So for those that may be new to the program, Weekly Notebook Review is an opportunity for us to go through a notebook, review and assess, you know, things that have kind of pivoted or changed from a single standpoint on the page, whether it be from the weekend work that we've done or from a day-over-day basis, in anticipation and preparation to get the portfolio right, moving forward, kind of end of this week, next month, next quarter, the rest of this year, et cetera, et cetera. I see we got some OGs up here. Gavin's listening in. Got the Thousandaire FX out of the UK. And Al's joining us down from Charlotte. So he said he was able to join to kind of talk a little bit on the insurance side of things and what he's seeing on that front, where he does a lot of his day job and is dealing with that side of the house. And given the fact that we are long IAK, I figured it'd be a good opportunity to get somebody boots on the ground and see what he's seeing out there to share that with HedgEye Nation. But if we want to jump things off, and again, you know, this is an open forum. It's really for HedgEye Nation. And we are, just kind of wanting to get everybody's sort of thoughts and views and what they're seeing and how they're positioning their portfolio. So just a few kind of bigger call outs. Obviously, we've got SPX pushing right to the top end, pretty close to the top end of the risk range. Or above it now, actually. Sorry, I had a minute to take a look at it. So yeah, I mean, obviously those risk ranges are dynamic, as most know that are listening to this call. With VIX kind of drifting down towards 12.5, low end of that risk range is 12.08 on the VIX. That does reflect, has an inverse or, I guess, a relationship with the top end of the risk range. The lower that low end of the risk range of VIX goes, the higher the top end of the range of the SPX can go. Alongside of price. So again, you're getting kind of that call resistance level is around 4,900. And we are just sitting sort of right there. The top end of the tier one sort of PV band was 4,886. So again, we're kind of above that as well. So just something to be paying attention to. Keith called it out on the macro show in terms of, days like today, when you got green on the screen, good opportunities to be, selling some longs or reducing some of that long exposure. He mentioned that he may be getting a little bit, perhaps net short kind of throughout the day. We'll see where that ends up. He hasn't, I don't think, hit the button too much on real-time alerts other than, selling some exposure. So again, that's something that he's reiterating and doing. So yes, just kind of one RTA out there this morning in utilities, XLU. And that's, that was a big signal. So if you haven't gotten to taking a look at that, please go review it. I think it's important to understand, what's transpiring out there and what we are seeing on the page. So SPX, top end of the risk range. The other component too is obviously you've got the dollar having a bit of a pretty big down move this morning. You've got the ECB out tomorrow morning. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the FOMC is out next Wednesday. So you got a lot of kind of data points, economic data points coming out next 2 days as well, with PCE on a quarterly basis, the preliminary number for the quarter, on both PC and GDP are out tomorrow morning at 8:30. ECB is at 8:15 Eastern time. And then you've got the December print for PCE on Friday as well. So look, you know, we got that. Those are pretty critical economic data points to be reviewing and just making sure that you're aware of what's there on the page. But realistically, at the end of the day, it's all about the signals, and the signals are telling you because they will guide or kind of almost front run, you know, what that data says and what the market is believing in, and the way it's being positioned at the moment is bullish SPYs, bullish NASDAQ, and bearish the Russell. So I think it's you're definitely seeing a divergence there. Even the Russell, you know, it's up 44 bips today, but it's kind of having. It's just been a bit of a struggle. Like it popped hard off the open up to 2000 and kind of similar level yesterday and just failed from there. So you're clearly seeing some sellers at that level. The top end of the risk range is, it's 1997. So we basically opened there and failed this morning. So again, just kind of paying attention to what these U.S. Equity indices are signaling from a risk range standpoint and from a trend standpoint are critically important. And I think that's really going to help you navigate, you know, what's in your portfolio and, you know, what shouldn't be. So again, at the moment, you know, tech remains bullish trend, Microsoft's bullish, Apple's bullish, Amazon's bullish, Meta, Google, Netflix, Nvidia, all bullish. The last remaining of that elite eight is Tesla. That is bearish trend on the page. They report after market today. So unlike on the Netflix going into the print yesterday, where it's bullish trend, that signal certainly confirmed what they ended up printing. Freebird's a phenomenal analyst. But in this case, this certainly the signal in the market is sort of trumping what the fundamental view is. And he mentioned it this morning too, in terms of, you know, it's much more, it was a Q2 call type thing, but they're seeing weaker data and going into or from December going, you know, from this Q4 print and kind of was anticipating a bit more of a weaker earnings report. But that's neither here nor there. I think, again, the biggest thing here from the notebook review standpoint is looking at what's making higher highs and higher lows and what is the trend signal telling us. I think a big call out here is consolidation within the gold risk range. You're seeing that low end of the risk range at 2006 to 2058. On the top end, just a week ago, that was, let's see here, 118 is the page I flipped to. So we'll just go on January 18th. The top end of the risk range is 2072. The low end was 2005. So we basically haven't done a whole lot from the low end of the risk range, really just some consolidation. But it is worthwhile noting that the top end has come down. So what that really means is this from a volatility standpoint, volatility is coming out of the out of gold. You just went, you know, as things move to the top end of the range, you're not going to, it's possible that you don't get quite as big of a move up. Now, again, if you start to see, you know, price move higher and volatility maybe come back into GBZ, it's down at sub 13 at the moment and off 106 base bips on a month-to-month basis. And again, you know, it's a little hat tip to Thousand Year FX out there. She also reminds me that gold vol actually can be a positive thing, and or volatility generally, it really does react differently within different kind of asset and asset classes. And lately, when gold vol has entered the room, you see a, you know, pretty big move, or can see or have seen a relatively strong move in the price of gold itself. So higher vol, I mean, not obviously breaking out like north of 20 would be bad, but sort of, in immediate term, sort of spikes in gold vol is actually, or can actually, you know, prove out to be a good thing from a gold price standpoint. So just keep an eye on that one. Obviously, we remain long of precious metals. That signal remains a bullish trend alongside uranium. So precious metals and uranium from a commodity standpoint, or, you know, generally speaking, commodity standpoint, are certainly two areas that we maintain that long exposure within the book. What else we got? Gavin.
Hey, Robert. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's been a minute.
It has.
You joined today.
Yeah, I'm just eating my lunch right now. So
that's understandable. Totally cool.
Yeah, how have you been, man?
I'm good, man. I'm very good.
Good.
Just, down in Connecticut for the day and back home later tonight. Can go taking the family up to Vermont for a little ski weekend this weekend, which will be fun, Gavin.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Seen a lot of friendly faces out here in the crowd. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's kind of an OG, a little bit of an OG notebook review. Was the gold call out something that piqued your interest?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've been seeing, gold as just kind of been bullish for a while now. Not like super bullish, but I would just say kind of like moderately bullish, just like hanging out under those highs. And, it's an interesting one, I guess. This is just kind of, for me coming into the year, there's not been a ton of change really. It's just kind of been more of the same. I think maybe there's some, I see Chris on here. There might be some interesting things to talk about in currencies, which I guess we can consider gold a currency, but with this China stimulus, it looks like currencies are really kind of moving today, and that might be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was kind of, you're front running me, which is great. It's, Gavin, I think the interesting thing here is how much is this sort of a reaction, immediate reaction to sort of what's transpiring? I think again, just to give, I don't know if you can talk, but Chris has mentioned this a lot in terms of, looking at the rate of change in terms of, the Fed, it just like the rates and rate cuts or sort of, hikes, and that had a negative impact on the dollar because the Fed was raising rates at a bit of a slower pace as of late versus some other countries, and other countries were forecasting or that they were going to be keeping their rates higher, and therefore but now you're kind of seeing a bit of opposite, right? And to your point, Gavin, China cut rates, you're seeing rates being cut in other EM countries as well. And so, it's a bit of a little bit of a different change of pace. So I think it will be interesting to see what the ECB does tomorrow. And Bank of England is also, I think, on the docket as well in the next few days or within the week. And I think it's, you're at a new phase, in my opinion, in terms of, can the Fed just keep rates like higher for longer? And do they need to adjust anything realistically if things aren't kind of quote currently breaking down? You've got the S&P at all time highs, right? So how it's gonna be kind of hard to justify cutting rates in that capacity. But again, the stock market is not the economy, and you're certainly seeing a lot of economic data like PMIs this morning, and even housing starts come out Friday as well. There's a lot of very lackluster portions within the economy and within the global business environment, specifically in kind of small caps and that kind of thing. So you got mega caps that have big moats, but the smaller caps are certainly not acting the same way and signaling the same thing as some of the other equities, and certainly just globally speaking as well.
For sure. I'm most interested in, Felix has been saying it the last couple of days on the call and has been saying it, but these chip stocks again today with AMSL, about 10%, and then everything, the whole pack runs with it. He's been calling that out every day, and I'm actually really interested. I said it in a video to watch Van Sciver and his team this week as some of these industrials, come out with reports, because to your point of the economic data that you just mentioned, I want to see how that kind of lines up. But for now, it's like these chip stocks are just the only game in town. And and comms have been good, pretty good too, completely. Obviously with Netflix, but really the chips. So
yeah, XLC has been a great place to park some, to have on the long side, and that has a good
good smattering of both Google, Meta, and Netflix inside of it. But Gavin, I'm going to take advantage of you on here because I do like the longer term sort of, I won't say calmer, but sort of the bigger picture view and approach. And because your comment about not a whole lot has changed, I would agree. I think there's been sort of kind of a 2 week window, I'd say, probably, where things have just looked not as decisive, I guess, especially within U.S. equities. But now we're seeing sort of a bit clearer picture form on the page in terms of, you know, the VIX moving back down, you know, below 13. You're seeing kind of this, like, these clear pictures form within the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, the Russell, even sort of the bond market itself as well, and currency. So just like a little bit clear pictures forming in my mind now. Again, you've got big earnings week this week from, and next, you know, I think I saw a tweet from Earnings Whisper that about 40 to 50% of S&P 500 companies actually report both this week and next week. So you can get a big, big influx of earnings and guidance and all that kind of stuff over the course of the next, you know, 10 days. And where would that put us, you know, coming out of that as we head into the rest of Q1 24?
For sure. I see Philip up here. I haven't talked to him in a bit.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, Goldstein. How are you doing, buddy?
Good, good. I'm liking this oil. I like what I'm seeing in oil here, possibly on the short side. This WTI, I've got higher lows and higher highs for 2 days now. We're pushing up the top end of the range today. Right, we're at 75.50 right now. Top morning range is 75.27. You got the OVX buried. You got trend. Keith talked about it yesterday, right, on the trade momentum signal and increasing the probability of going to the top end of the range. And since then, you know, that's been working. And we got trend somewhere around 77 ish. So I'm watching that as a short. You know, it's still within a bearish trend, so it wouldn't be a surprise to get up to trend and then maybe have a back off there. It would certainly be part of the bearish commodity story here. So I just put a toe in, maybe a nail of a toe, the small toe, yesterday on short oil, short WTI, just to watch it. Haven't done much else, but that's looking interesting here, maybe in a few days.
Yeah, and you know, it's, again, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, energy, XLE, has been absolutely smoked the last few months, to say at least, really since kind of September, those September, mid-September highs. And yeah, I mean, what could you see a kind of rotation, a bit of a rotation trade? You know, Philip, you and I talked about this via text yesterday. And yeah, I mean, could you see a bit of a rotation? I don't know. Right now, you know, to me, there's just like better things to be long in terms of, you know, things that are putting in higher highs and higher lows and moving up to all-time highs. Like XLC, this is a really good example in terms of, you know, it's pushing up on, you know, new highs in terms of on a 1 year basis, and you know that all-time high from 2021 is up at 85 ish. So again, we're just kind of continuing to slog higher there. XLK would be a similar setup. It's bullish trade on the page. It's actually probably an even better signal where it is putting in like all new all-time highs up at, you know, 204 today, and surpassed, you know, the high put in, you know, what was that last week, or sorry, in December, and then same thing in the end of July. So there's just it's a lot easier to be long stuff right now than short, just where, and especially if you've got to go anywhere global,
opportunity to do so, because you've got, you know, good economic data out of India that's really proving worthwhile to have on in the book. You've got, you know, as I said, uranium exposure that's really working phenomenally well. It's been along the bars for quite some time. Keith added the cannabis MSOS within the last, you know, week or so as well. So, I mean, it's not just, yes, it's not just sort of like international stuff like that, but you've got some, just some interesting little small caps down there in the cannabis space that are perking up and looking good too.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys, since we were talking about the dollar again, you know, the dollar the last few days has been dancing around trend.
Yep.
It only closed, it closed maybe like 2 days above trend, what's today? Today's Wednesday. It's like Thursday and Monday. Now we're back below. I looked at the US dollar correlations table. The 15 day and the 30 day have changed quite significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like trying to make sense of it while at the same time thinking about what I discussed last week, which was the looking at all the international ETFs, kind of projecting out towards a longer term, who's got multiple quad one and quad twos coming up. How are they reacting as the dollar was going up and some of the sell-offs on international ETFs? And are those opportunities to get in? So what do you think is, what do you make of the dollar here? Kind of flirting with trend and then not really meaningfully going up, big changes in correlation. Is there anything to make of that?
Well, I would say,
either one. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that it's doing kind of what I would expect it to do. You know, it's, I think going to be hard for it to really, first I'll just say, I think it's probably like moderately bullish, and I've started to kind of use those words just to kind of say what I think, you know, try to articulate it. So I wouldn't say I'm really bullish on the dollar, but I'm not bearish on it. And I think that makes sense because, you know, with the kind of rate cut expectations, Chris probably has thoughts on this, like Robert, you alluded to before. It's kind of like, until we really know what's going to happen this year, you know, why would it really pick a direction, I guess is my thought. So I just kind of see it as like a bit bullish and not really bearish. And I don't have like a really big idea on the dollar at this point.
Yeah, I think from a consensus standpoint, a big call out from the CFTC data from Friday that was released again. We're going to get, you know, new data that's now over a week old. It gets calculated on Tuesdays for those that aren't aware, and then released on Friday afternoons. You know, consensus is generally underweight the dollar, and you know, they're not shorted, but they're underweighted. So I think that's definitely an interesting component here, Philip, where if consensus does start to rotate back into like the DXY then, or USD, then, you know, you could see further strength there. But at the same time, you also saw them basically be net sellers on a week over week basis into the kind of recent strength from the last, in the last sort of, you know, two weeks or so, right? So that kind of does tell you a little bit as to what to be thinking about. And then they're like a lot less, or not a lot, but they're less short of the JPY, and kind of, you know, similarly, not quite as underweight the dollar, but certainly underweight to minus 1.07 times on a 1 year Z score on the euro. So again, it's just, I think, you know, that rotation in terms of currencies, yeah, it's just, to Gavin's point, I think it is sort of just a little bit in flux at the moment, as folks try to better understand and assess like what is like the rate cut or rate hike situation going to look like here in 2024, and, you know, how serious are central banks going to go and try to fight inflation and try to hit those 2% targets. I actually saw a meme this morning about how, you know, the 2% inflation target's going to, they're going to just magically say it's 3% that they're hitting it. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it's just, I think, you know, Gavin, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of like, it's kind of acting the way one would think. It's, you know, moved up to the top of the risk range yesterday and now it's pulled off of it. So, you know, Philip, you know this holds better than anybody in terms of things that go to the top in the range, have a tendency, you know, to revisit the bottom third of the range.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool to think about it too, just like, okay, so let's say it's in your portfolio right now. And then let's put a scenario on the board, like you're long some, you know, 2-year notes or something, right? And so maybe it acts as like a hedge to that position if rates do go back up higher or something, you know, so you can kind of just like think about it, you know, as how it would like fit in and work with what you got going on, you know? So, but yeah, that's my takeaway. I like what you just said, Robert, but just kind of like not bearish, definitely bullish, but not like expecting like a 2022 type performance from the dollar.
From you know, exactly. And depending on like how you express it, but if you're just using like the UUP ETF, you know, that's got a big weighting, you know, primary weighting towards the Euro USD piece, right? And then also has, you know, JPY and some pounds. So you could, again, I mean, you can create like a bit of a basket if you don't like the way that UUP is acting or what have you, or if you just, you're less, you know, you want kind of like less exposure to the Euro, you can go out and put on, say, you know, FXY, for instance, if you wanted to be kind of like counter trend, but realistically more like FXB and FXF in terms of the Swiss franc and the pound. So you can kind of diversify that exposure. Again, those are other ETFs. Obviously, you can also just go straight to the wood with an FX account and, you know, play various, you know, pairs and stuff like that as well. But just from an ETF standpoint, those are definitely other ways of trying to kind of diversify your FX book.
Let me jump in real quick and just mention one other thing before I let some others speak. The PJP, the pharma ETF, had shown up on Portfolio Solutions. It had been quite bullish. And more recently, it looks to me like it's been consolidating. It came off the top end of the range. I think it tapped the low end of the range. We don't get, I don't think we get the actual risk range. So I'm kind of relying on my own tools here. And I see it now just kind of hovering in the middle of the range, basically, but that top end has not come down. I don't see, I don't really see lower highs. I see the high end just steady. So maybe this is a consolidation today. It's red on price. There's not much volume behind it. So this might just be a little consolidation to watch out for. We don't, you know, it's kind of been one of those hated sectors where that caught a lot of people off guard over the last several weeks. On a weekly basis, it's still making higher highs on the trend signal. I'm sorry, on the risk range. So might be something to look for as a potential bull run here, you know, after this consolidation.
Nice. Yeah, good call out. Yeah, I mean, healthcare today in general is sort of getting a little bit spanked. But generally speaking, you know, there's definitely been a great addition to the portfolio, whether it be through Pink or even just XLV, but you know, IHI also popped onto the radar this week too, and PJP, we're certainly long that, as you mentioned, inside and Pink within Portfolio Solutions. So yeah, really good call out. The other one that's relatively new is housing in ITB. That's been a great, you know, strong run since the October lows. But certainly is pulling back here off of that DHI report, and we're taking advantage of that. You know, it's still holding, you know, certainly trend bullish trend signal, and yeah, so just kind of calling that one out too. Owl, just where we're talking healthcare, it's perfect timing, Philip. Thanks for teeing me up here. Owl, thank you. I really appreciate you reaching out this morning to kind of share what you're seeing inside of the insurance space. And yeah, so just kind of, you know, we're certainly long the INK, and would love to just sort of get a little bit of a little bit further kind of boots on the ground assessment as to what's happening on a positively and potentially negative side of things within that arena.
Oh yeah, well, hey Robert, thanks so much for for making some time for me. And it's great to see everybody out there again. Thank you. First disclaimer, Owl is one thing and for wisdom at your own risk. I don't own any of these companies. I can't because I'm in the business and no investment advice. But I thought since I'm a call junkie, never miss an episode. And, the nation has been, long and strong on this IAK ETF. I thought I'd spend a few minutes on, what it is, what it's not, where it fits into the insurance constellation, and, why it may have been performing so well over the last few months, and, what would be, from a fundamental point of view, the things to look out for. So starting from the top, insurance, we all know hedge eye risk management, but there's this other parallel universe of risk management called insurance. And it comes in a few major flavors, managed care, which Emily covers extremely well. And then there's property casualty, who are probably the folks best from advertising on sports. And then on the life companies who do more, not as much kind of basketball, football, but golf tournaments. Let's focus on property casualty because I'll go through the components of IAK, and it's a very highly weighted property casualty ETF, and that's been one of the major drivers of its price performance. Property casualty insurance is all about being able to price frequency and severity of claims. Insurance is unique in that their product is also their liability. Right? So when an insurance company books a policy that they've sold to you, they're basically, booking a liability, which is a reserve for their expected payout over the course of the insurance contract, usually a year, relative to the premium. And property casualty insurers measure themselves by what's called the combined ratio, or it's basically what is the cost of the claim plus the cost of administration of the claim, basically the overhead of the company relative to the premium that's charged. So ratios that are over 100% mean that, you're losing money on every dollar premium that you write. Ratios below 100 are obviously means that delta is your profit margin, adjusted for interest. And that's one of the first places I'll go, in that, in the macro dynamics of the industry, when insurers collect premiums, they don't pay claims on the same day they collect premiums. They pay claims, on average, 6 months after they collect them, assuming an annual calendar, which means that insurance companies benefit a lot from float when interest rates are positive. And, prior to zero interest rate policies, a lot of insurance companies, ran their businesses intentionally to break even on claims relative to premiums. And their entire profit margin was really the interest that they earned on the float. Okay. When rates went to zero, that strategy was no longer a winner. And companies had to really be careful with their underwriting and their pricing in order to make money. So I've already given away one of the drivers of insurance performance, over the last, 18 months, which is you know, when you're making money on your float and your regulatory capital position versus not, that's a great tailwind for the industry. Going back to frequency and severity, the setup for this run in insurance stocks was really a disaster for insurance stocks that preceded. During lockdown, not many of us were doing much driving, or really not that much of anything else. And claims, certainly for motor vehicles, just plummeted, which was great news for insurance companies because they were still collecting the premium. But, when everybody got back to work, inflation spiked, that caused a real problem for the industry in terms of both frequency and severity, because the number of claims, started to skyrocket, and the severity, I think, is what caught most insurers by surprise. And going back to the auto example, I don't know who among the group has had to buy a new car or have a car fixed or whatever. I mean, Josh Steiner has done a great job.
I've had to do both.
over many months, with these Manheim used car indexes, spiking like a cliff, right? And when used car prices spike like that, it drives all kinds of things. It makes it more expensive for insurance companies to settle claims because replacements are so expensive. But it also drives things like automobile theft. So if the price of used car spikes, auto theft spikes. So not only do you get hit on the severity piece on your claims, but you also have a frequency kick just from stolen cars. So hopefully y'all are getting the picture in that, a year or so ago, most companies were just getting creamed. And what that did is it precipitated what we call in insurance a hard market. So in capital markets where, we live our hedge eye lives, there are bull markets and bear markets. In insurance, there are hard markets and soft markets. In a hard market, that means that there's not enough capital to go around to support the writing of the risk that the market has an appetite for. A soft market means that there's too much capital chasing too few risks, which means that premiums relative to risk go down. Okay? So what we've been in is an extraordinarily hard market for property casualty insurance. But it's not like most companies can raise prices immediately. Pretty much all consumer products that you would own, okay, and these are for the companies that you would know from watching television or wherever you get your insurance from. Consumer insurance is extremely highly regulated, and the products are pretty cookie cutter, so that the regulators don't want insurance companies to take advantage of their insureds, because of some fine print. So the rules and regulations are very clear. The other part is that insurance companies aren't allowed to raise prices on consumer products without approval from the insurance commissioner of the state. So a big company like, say, an Allstate, writes business in all 50 states, plus DC, Puerto Rico, and so on. But if they're ever going to raise rates in any of those jurisdictions, they have to have approval from the insurance commissioner. Now, often the insurance commissioner is an elected official, which means that, they campaign on getting better deals for their citizens from the big evil insurance companies. Okay, fine. I mean, they do have a big consumer protection function. That's a big part of their job. But, you know, so they try to, stiff arm requests for rate increases. But, you know, the losses that were suffered, you know, a year or so ago were so bad that a lot of companies were just frankly running out of capital. Because when you take hits to regulatory capital, another function of that is that you can't write as much business because there are leverage limits, you know, on how much you can write, you know, off of a given capital base. For the same reason in a bank, there are certain amounts you can lend on certain risks without, you know, without violating risk-based capital parameters. So they're both the regulated and the regulator were kind of in a pickle. Because the regulator would, you know, have to basically backtrack on their pledge to protect consumers, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, you may have read in the paper that, you know, outfits like Allstate decided to stop writing new homeowner policies in California. You're like, whoop, what? But the reason is that if they can raise rates in, you know, 40 other states and get a better return on their capital, why in the world would they want to write new policies in California? And, you know, often, you know, California and Florida are poster children for these cases because they often carry the greatest risks. Florida, obviously, due to windstorm. California, you know, wildfire, quake, you name it. So hopefully this is helping you guys, you know, understand this. But the reason that the stocks are doing well now is that the rate increases that the property casualty companies have petitioned for at the state regulators are coming through, which means that not only will these companies benefit from high interest rates, but now their premiums per the risk are finally catching up and then some with the losses that they've suffered. Right. So, and this is, you know, highly levered. So, you know, flipping from a, you know, combined ratio in the past that might have been 110, 115, and being able to forecast, you know, combined ratios of 92 with, you know, 5% T-bills and inflation moderating, right? So, you know, heaven forbid some of those claim costs, you know, actually start to come down, then the insurance industry flips from bleeding money to printing money. And their premium rates are going to be sticky because the regulators typically don't go to the industry and say, hey, you got to drop your rates. You know, they'll jawbone that in public, of course. But what real, you know, coming to the, you know, toward the end of this is what would cause the insurers to lose profitability? And, you know, basically that's going to be pricing, lack of price discipline, because we've now transitioned from a period where, you know, insurers have too little capital and they have to parcel it out very carefully at a high price to having too much capital. Because a lot of these profits they're making on the current policies are going to go back into their surplus. They're not necessarily going to be dividended. I'll tell you about mutuals in a minute. With public companies, say, well, just pay a special dividend to your shareholders or buy back stock or whatever. There's a feature of the insurance industry that prevents that in a lot of cases. So you get to a point where insurers have too much capital, and then they start to compete to grow market share. And that's when premiums start to fall, and that's when dumb pricing starts to take over and margins suffer, and you flip from, you know, a hard market to a soft market. And then once you're in a soft market, all you need is an inflation spike or, you know, three Cat 5 storms in Florida or a California quake or something like that, and then it blows up a bunch more insurance capital, and you start over. So I'm going to stop there real quick before I go into the index construction and ETF construction, see if anybody's got questions.
Yeah, that was really great rundown. I appreciate it. Anybody up, Phil? I know, or Gavin, anybody, or even Chris, you guys got any questions for him?
Go to what?
All right, well, let's keep rolling then now.
Okay.
I have a meeting at 12:30, so I've got about
10 minutes, but that's perfect.
This will be quick.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so who's in this index? yeah, the index of IAK, the top 10 are Progressive, Chubb, Travelers, American International Group, AIG, Aflac, Allstate, MetLife, Prudential, Arch, and Hartford. Okay. And that's 2/3 of the composition of the index. Aflac is kind of a special case, but only MetLife at number 7 and 8, or, you know, less than 10% of the index, of at least the top 10, are life companies. And those are basically the two biggest ones. So, you know, this is a case where this index is weighted, you know, 5 or 6 to 1 property casualty versus life, and it includes no managed care. Okay. So IAK, you know, really has the names that are going to, you know, benefit a lot from, you know, what I've mentioned. You might ask, well, gee, where the hell is State Farm? How about Nationwide? And the answer is that those are mutuals. Those companies are owned by their policyholders, which is why I was telling you that the public company alternative of buying back stock or paying dividends doesn't exist for mutuals. They just have to give policyholders a refund on their policies, which they generally don't do. And that's why, you know, the capital discipline, you know, kind of gets really bad in soft markets, is that, you know, an Allstate who's public might return cash to shareholders, but a State Farm just wants to write more business and take market share. And they don't have an analyst from Old Wall to scold them for poor, you know, capital stewardship, right? The good news is you can't buy those in this index, because they're, you know, you can't do that. But anyway, yeah. So there's no Berkshire Hathaway in this index, because, you know, they own Geico and General Re. There's no United Healthcare or Elevance or Cigna or CVS, who are much, much bigger companies than, you know, all these PNC companies. But they're in a different business, and Emily covers that well, so I'm not going to go into that. But anyway, so hopefully that helps people understand, you know, why IAK has been, you know, a rocket ship to date. And, you know, also think about, you know, what are the conditions that, you know, would cause it, from at least a fundamental point of view, to weaken over time. I will say one more thing before I shut up, and that is that insurance could be a good quad four performer, because consumers can't not buy it, right? You have to have car insurance to be on the road. You have to have homeowners insurance to get a mortgage, right? You know, all these things are, you know, are compulsory just to, you know, function in most of American society. So, you know, it's not like a lot of, it's kind of the opposite of consumer discretionary. You have to have it. And, you know, it also means that it's incredibly cutthroat, because it's commoditized product. So that, you know, people do, you know, price comps, and, you know, they'll change carriers for, you know, to save a dollar. Right. So, you know, interesting dynamics to it, but, you know, since that was a big, you know, gap in analyst coverage, I thought I'd share with y'all, you know, what the hell is going on at insurance land and why IAK has been a good performer.
That's really great stuff, Al. Really appreciate it. It's one of the
absolute beauties of Hedgehog Nation is just the wealth of knowledge across the board in various industries. And it's just super cool. So thanks. I appreciate you taking your time.
My pleasure.
To do that. And yeah, no, just really, really appreciate it. It's a great rundown. I had the pleasure of you kind of running me through when we first started to get some exposure to insurance back in October when I was visiting you in your home city. But, but yeah, it's been a heck of a run, and looks like things are, again, just from a signal standpoint, that's what we like to see. New eyes on a 1 month, 3 month basis.
Yeah, I don't have the signal, so keep an eye on that because if it starts making lower highs, then it almost doesn't matter what the fundamentals are.
Right.
When they line up, like I said, what people say, when they line up, so much the better. But when the signals start saying lower highs, that means get a lot less greedy.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Chris, I know you jumped up and you shared some little imagery on the FX space in terms of currencies. You want to quickly run through what you're seeing out there? And then we'll, unfortunately, I got to kind of wrap it up here today.
Yeah.
You're on mute, mate, if you're talking. All right, well, he can't jump up. So let me just wrap things up here, which is totally cool. But Chris shared some of his signals and stuff like that on FX in the tweet below this space session. So Gavin, Phil, Al, really appreciate you guys sharing your thoughts and contributing as always. Gavin, it's always a pleasure to have you up. It's good to kind of see you back in the fold here.
That was fun, man, and Al, and thank you for that. That was very much worth the time. Thanks.
Oh, hey, thanks. Means a lot coming from you, Gavin. Hopefully I'll see you again soon.
Take it easy, guys.
All right, guys. Yep. Enjoy the
rest of your day. Will.
Have a good chat, guys. Cheers. See ya.
Don't forget to check out Hedgeye.com to get more actionable investing insights from our team of more than 40 research analysts. And check us out on Twitter at our handle, @Hedgeye. This presentation is informational only. None of the information contained herein constitutes an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor does it constitute investment recommendation or legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice by Hedgeye or any of its employees, officers, agents, or guests. This information is presented without regard for individual investment preferences or risk parameters and is general, non-tailored, non-specific information. This content is based on information from sources believed to be reliable. Hedgeye is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information. The opinions and conclusions contained in this report are those of the individual expressing those opinions and conclusions and are intended solely for the use of Hedgeye subscribers and the authorized recipients of the content. All investments entail a certain degree of risk, and financial instrument prices can fluctuate based on several factors, including those not considered in the preparation of the content. Consult your financial professional before investing. The information contained herein is protected by United States and foreign copyright laws and is intended solely for the use of its authorized recipient. Access must be provided directly by Hedgeye. Redistribution or republication is strictly prohibited. For more detail, please refer to the terms of service at hedgeye.com/terms of service.